CITR Radio would like to remind you that this program is a three-dimensional color presentation. For quality sound and vivid imagery, please use your CITR 3D earplugs.
Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to CITR Doc Season 2. We are broadcasting from CITR 101.9 FM, located on the unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. So if you listened to the last episode that we released 2 days ago, you'll know that this week we are releasing two pieces from students who are doing work in radio for the very first time here at CITR 101.9 FM. We're all about getting newcomers published in our magazine Discorder. We're all about getting fresh voices on the air and in the booth. So when Maham came to the station, she was very interested in just diving into our topic for a CITR documentary. She was interested in providing a perspective which, if prevalent on campus here at UBC, is certainly not something that everyone articulates and talks about. It is the perspective of the international student, of the difficulties therein, the cultural and geographic boundaries, but also the perspective of people who work within the campus in terms of addressing those challenges. Certainly, as Maham says, global is a fashionable word to use, but for all this talk about global movement and currents, whether you're all for it or someone who is coming from a more critical place, what gets missed is that the subject concerns, first and foremost, the lives of people and students who are making their way across vast geographical and cultural distances. So with that in mind, this is It's Not Easy Crossing Oceans by Maham Kamal. Stay tuned.
I anxiously awaited my Canadian visa approval and wondered whether I would be able to make it to Vancouver or not. I had recently withdrawn from American University in Washington, D.C. in hopes of starting over in Canada, so the heat of Karachi summers was even more unbearable for the period of wait. Above everything, my friends and family had warned me of likely delays and rejections. End of June, on a scorching afternoon, I received a rejection letter from the embassy and almost broke down. My mother comforted me that her own visa came only the day she was scheduled to leave for UBC, back in 2002. But on the other hand, I remembered that my best friend couldn't reach the Okanagan campus until January of the winter term. I still reapplied, trying to address all concerns the embassy had expressed with my case, but the months to follow were only downhill, as Vancouver seemed a more distant destination for me. I almost believed I wouldn't make it, and there was no one to help. It was a brutal waiting game. Gradually, the UBC Class of 2020 Facebook page began to fill with anxious posts of other international students from around the world with the same plight. It didn't make me feel better to see similar cases, but it still did, to see that I was not alone. Today, when I walk around the UBC campus, I hear chatter in different languages, smell foreign cuisine, and see that there are students and faculty from every part of the world. I don't take the diversity of UBC for granted anymore. I know that there is a story behind each student's journey to this multicultural campus. In fact, when I stride from classes to residence to the nest, I wonder what motivates universities to open doors to the world despite bureaucratic issues? What motivates people to fly across continents to embrace a foreign land despite long waits? And how does the University of British Columbia embrace international students? I embark this journey of talking to the International Student Development Office and the Global Lounge to understand what it means at UBC to be globally minded. What are the resources used to bridge geographical, cultural, and linguistic barriers? In this process, I first spoke to the director of the International Student Development Office, Michelle Suderman, who I met at an international student's mental health focus group earlier this semester. I sat down with her for a detailed conversation on what our organization at UBC has been doing for international students.
Sure. Well, you probably know that at UBC we're fortunate to have just about 23% of all students coming from overseas with international student status, so meaning the Canadian government requires them to have some kind of paperwork or recognition to be able to be studying in Canada. Mm-hmm. Over 13,000 students. That's a lot of students. And so we know it's not enough to just recruit people from all around the world, even though we're recruiting, I'll say, top talent, students who really are highly competitive to be able to be here. That doesn't mean that we're all going to thrive in a new environment. And so most universities in Canada have an office or several that supports international students in a really specific way. And at UBC, that's no different. So international student development works to ensure the university is a place where international students can thrive during and after their time at UBC.
As Michelle notes, that's a lot of students. It is not only essential to consider the expanse of diversity this brings, but we must also acknowledge the array of logistical issues arising due to this. Michelle further explains that mitigating this and many other issues is a big part of the work of ISDO.
There are some administrative or kind of bureaucratic issues that people often don't think of with international students. So one of them is study permits and work permits for students, entry visas, that sort of thing, even for spouse partners or dependent children who are accompanying. So our office actually has the core expertise for the UBC Vancouver campus around international students immigration. We're the only ones actually who are authorized to give advice to UBC international students on their Canadian immigration in terms of UBC staff. And then another is health insurance. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had claims in the Lower Mainland for international students who from a single illness or injury have had $250,000 in medical costs. If there isn't an insurance company that's going to pick up those costs, it's got your form. If there isn't an insurance company that's going to pick up those costs, that means families are having to sell their homes. It's big deal, and it can really endanger a person's ability to continue their studies and move on with their personal and career goals. So immigration and health insurance are two areas that we focus on particularly, which is different than the other office on campus. And then more broadly, we work with students around cultural transitions. So we often will talk with students who will wonder, my professor's looking at me funny, is that Canadian? Or my roommate is treating me in a certain way, is that Canadian? Or I'm having trouble making friends. What is it about the way people make friends in Canada that's baffling to you? How can we find a way to navigate it, this new place, this new culture? And of course, then the students are able to get their services and supports from anywhere on campus. If a student has an academic advising question, they can go to their academic advisor. If a student has a health issue, they can certainly go to student health. If they want to talk to somebody about mental health concerns, they can go to the wellness center, they can go to counseling, speakeasy. But when they want to talk about things that are specific to being an international student, our office is a great place to start.
Documentation is indeed a very crucial part of the life of international students. Around UBC, nothing much separates students, yet a small mistake in documentation can significantly separate paths for domestic and international students, despite equal abilities. As I recalled earlier, I faced delays in receiving my visa, but I did not miss a term. However, this being my very first time in Canada, I did not know what a proper study permit looks like. So I was excited to receive this piece of paper at the Vyvyar International Airport. But only to realize this a few weeks later that it was missing an important section on employment conditions that prevented me from getting my social insurance number and taking employment. And another waiting period began for me as I had to get the document amended. I mailed it to Ottawa, but unfortunately, I did not get it back until I traveled in winter break and got a new one made at the airport. Now, it could be my luck or mere complacence that I land in this situation each time. But these small things made a great difference to my first few months in Vancouver. This has certainly made my time at UBC more meaningful, as I now understand that small paperwork mistakes here and there can lead to big changes in my university path. As I began to settle in Vancouver and establish a perception of the identity of international students, I came across a belief that international students prevent domestic students from having access to Canadian universities, and therefore, UBC should not admit so many. In the early years, government and development organizations brought international students to universities. But slowly, universities found revenue and prestige in charging different foreign students a differential tuition fee. So today, nothing really prevents foreign students from going anywhere if they have the academic excellence and finances of doing so. At UBC itself, there are 13,189 international students from 155 countries in different undergraduate, graduate, and postgraduate programs. While a domestic student pays $172 per credit in fees, an international student pays $1,163 for the same. But this hasn't deterred any foreign students from enrolling, as UBC has several forms of scholarships and financial bursaries for international students. However, in the face of globalization, the motivations of students coming to foreign universities and universities recruiting foreign students have definitely changed. It is about an environment where all students learn from each other's diversity. When I was talking to Michelle about this, she expressed that she also believes the same as an educator and a parent when I posed the question of this conflict of interest to her.
It really is it's a challenging position that a public institution in Canada to be in, to know that the provincial government is allocating a precise number of spots for undergraduate students and that no Canadian students can be accepted to the university above that, and yet to have then the freedom to take on as many non-Canadian students as we would have the capacity to do, and to have the freedom to set the tuition limits, knowing that on the domestic side, in many provinces, as in BC, there is a limit set by the provincial government of how much domestic tuition can be. So trying to offer a fantastic educational experience, or as I think Professor Ono is saying now, an exceptional educational experience for all students, and trying to work with an increasingly globalized setting, it becomes challenging to know how to bring in international students in a way that is going to create really that dynamic living and learning environment that everyone's hoping for. My son's only 7, but I really hope that when he comes to UBC, and he has to come to UBC, I've told him, that he studies not just alongside students from all over the world, but that he comes to deeply understand what matters to them and what their values are and how they see the world. And that doesn't happen from just sitting together in class. That's about meaningful interaction with each other. So what are we doing as an institution to ensure that students and staff and faculty can have those kind of mind-blowing experiences to realize the limits of our own idea of what's right and normal and good and of what we count as knowledge?
The increasingly globalized setting referred to by Michelle is interesting to note here. We use the word global so often now that it seems to be losing meaning. In a university setting, it is not just enough to interact with diversity. It is important to think globally. When I was thinking over this question myself, I thought of the Global Lounge, a space and team of students dedicated to bringing globally minded students together at UBC to discuss world issues. I spoke to the program advisor, Global Campus Initiatives, Eve Gort, and her team of Global Lounge community animators one afternoon.
Program advisor for Global Campus Initiatives is my job title, which means I manage the wonderful student staff that work here. There's 8 of them, so we have our 6 community animators here now, and then we have 2 tandem coordinators who are away at a conference, and I also program and advise in the MasterCard Foundation Scholarship Program.
As a frequent visitor to their events, I know the kind of events and programming taking place at the Global Lounge. Events like the International Development Week and Impact Lab are day or week-long conferences with students, faculty, and community members initiating dialogue on important global issues. I was more interested in knowing from Eve's team what challenges they face in executing their plans and achieving their goal at UBC. This is crucial to understanding what the wider campus thinks about this idea of the increasingly globalized setting that Michelle referred to earlier.
I think one challenge you can point out from more the end of getting the word out there is, like you say, the perception that it's an international student space. I've many times talked to colleagues who local students and I try to encourage them to come to the lounge. And the first thing they say, I thought it was maybe more international students focused. So I think that's a challenge, given the nature of the programming, given the naming, like Global Lounge, international student engagement. So like it always gives off that kind of perception, which I think going down the road has lessened because more people get involved and get to know access spaces open to everyone. But I think that's the challenge.
And moreover, I think the location of the space is absolutely wonderful. It's an open, bright environment, but the location being in Marine Drive Residence is a little bit inconvenient for some students, but moreover, I think it causes a little bit of confusion in terms of why it's located here. Some people think it's only meant for Marine Drive residents. Some people think it's sort of synonymous with the commuter student program, but it's not. It's an entirely separate space from all of those things.
Brian and Swetha from the Global Lounge team both outlined very important challenges in the work of Global Lounge. One thing it brings to light is the perception that a space for globally minded initiatives is to be solely for international students. Not only does this hinder Global Lounge's outreach, it defeats the purpose of diversity as there are no cross-cultural connections. After all, international is such a relative term today because there is so much more common between people from all over the world. Yet, there are small details that make us unique. As an international student myself, I struggle with this divide regularly. People are often surprised that I can speak English fluently, even though I come from Pakistan. I wonder if I spoke differently, they would be more inclined to ask if I was not from Canada or show more curiosity towards my background and identity. Now, I try my best each time to squeeze in this important fact about my identity. But rapid globalization is making us all become so similar that I don't blame anyone for ignoring this. The trouble is that in the long run, it could lead us to ignore important lessons from each culture, especially in an environment like UBC, where there is so much effort to go back in history and understand crucial lessons from every part of the world. These lessons can help us figure out why we are what we are today and teach us how to go forward with our problems. I wrap up my first year at UBC and gear up to start a new one with a new kind of curiosity towards all parts of the world, different cultures and different people, and serve the purpose of diversity in a more engaged and interactive way.
You are listening to CITR Docs Season 2. That was It's Not Easy Crossing Oceans by Maham Kamal. You can find out more about the CITR Docs series by going to citr.ca/docs, or you can look up CITR Docs on Stitcher and iTunes to find past episodes. Dive more into the vast spectrum of releases that we have. Coming up next week on Monday, we got a release from Josh Gabbert-Doyen. This is the second documentary he's worked on for CITR Docs Season 2. It's about a history of narratives around tunnels in Chinatown and about the various implications that that may have. Stay tuned for a snippet.
Hey guys.
It's Saturday, around noon, and Malcolm Eric Hassan is tending bar at SBC. Malcolm is groggy. Last night there was a show at SBC. This morning there's people skating and coming in and out. About half the room is occupied by this wooden ramp that Malcolm and Andrew Turner, the other co-owner of the bar, built themselves. In its current form, it's a punk venue and a bar that sells cheap banana bread and greasy snacks. I've come to investigate a rumor that I heard a few months ago. The rumor says that there's a network of tunnels that runs underneath the neighborhood, and that the tunnel network connects with SBC. The rumor also says that the tunnels have been around for a long time, maybe 100 years or more. The rumor says that tunnels connect with SBC's basement, and that some dark, maybe even supernatural stuff has gone on down there over the course of their history. Here's Malcolm again. Word of warning, parts of Malcolm's audio here is very, very bad quality, mainly because of the loud hair metal music in the back. It was a bar after all.
Do you have any sense of where they went? Did they went towards the port, or they?
We've been told to go as far as Stanley Park, like that they're all connected.